Hi there. Thank you for downloading this free audiobook, which is written and recorded by Matthew Warner. You're free to distribute this to whomever you like, provided that you make at least one visit to MatthewWarner.com to look around. This story is based almost entirely upon true anecdotes of the 18th century transatlantic slave trade. It originally appeared in the anthology Extremes 3, Terror on the High Seas, produced by Lone Wolf Publications in 2001. It was reprinted by Undaunted Press in 2005 as the first story in my collection, Death Sentences, Tales of Punishment and Revenge. It's entitled Middle Passage. Nothing came out when Poro vomited because his stomach was empty. On his lap, the slave who just shit diarrhea onto him spoke in Mende.
"I'm sorry, my friend, but I am shackled here."
"We all are," Poro said. And the slaves on his immediate right and left, and those sitting on their laps, chorused agreement. Hundreds of similar conversations, muffled in another African languages, filled the slave ship's hold. Inches overhead, a wooden shelf dripped with the sweat and urine of those above. "Please make it an 8-week journey and no longer," he thought. Or had the surgeon at Gore Island been lying? Poro's French wasn't so good, and the whites looked so strange, the long hair, beards, pale skin, and eyes, that it was difficult to detect untruths. He hadn't seen much of the man's face anyhow. The surgeon had been too busy examining his anus, tasting his temple for disease, shaving his head and frowning at his ritual scars, and jamming a spoonful of lime juice down his throat for Luskalbut. But as degrading as that had been, nothing had compared to the pain of watching a red-hot brand sear the chest of his 11-year-old daughter, not even when that iron was applied to himself. Jacoby's jabbing elbow brought him back. "Don't expect to wash yourself when we're above deck." When we're above deck, Poro thought. Jacoby referred to rumors that they were finally coming out, one section at a time, so the crew could cleanse the hold. Trying to joke, he said, "Maybe they'll let us swim." "If not, then I'm jumping overboard," Jacoby said. "I'm suffocating down here." Poro chuckled until he realized his friend wasn't joking. "You'll drown before you reach land." "I know." Wishing he could see Jacoby in the pitch blackness, Poro blew him a stream of air.
"Stop that.
I'm helping you breathe."
"I really will jump," Jacoby said.
"No, you won't."
"And why not?"
"Because your right ankle is shackled to my left, and I'm staying." The slave to Poro's right jostled him.
"Both of you be quiet. You're using all the air."
So they quieted for the next 2 hours, breathing the humid stench of excrement. Trying to get some feeling back into his ass, Poro raised first one buttock, then the other, and was rewarded with burning needles of pain. Reclined as he was on the tiny shelf space, he was thankful to have even that much room. The man who had shit on him had less. Picking at the burn blisters on his chest, Poro worried about his daughter, Semeta, chained somewhere amidships. Even if he escaped his chafing ankle shackle, Poro knew he couldn't reach her. All the children languished on the other side of a stack of water barrels and a wooden bulkhead, and aft ships of Semeta behind another bulkhead and under the captain's quarters were the women. Semeta wouldn't have had any trouble understanding the surgeon at Gore. Back in the court of King Kiros, his little girl had been a better translator than he, fluent in all the slave traders' languages, both Senegambian and white. The king had used the father reluctantly, for Poro had been a loudmouth who didn't know his place, who'd protested too much one day about the cruelty of the king's slaves' inwardly spiked collars. By the next day, father and daughter had been fitted with their own. Nausea rose again as the ocean roiled around the large sailing ship. Poro closed his eyes and sipped shallow breaths. It was too hot to breathe. Light leaked through the shadows. The crowd was moving.
"I told you they're letting us out," Jacoby said, and helped him to his hands and knees.
Since they had only 3 feet of clearance, they were obliged to crawl to the single ladder going above decks. Nobody had strength for climbing, especially while shackled together in awkward pairs, so it took a long time for the line to move. When he reached the ladder, Poro looked up at the hatch to see a mustachioed sailor, framed by the evening sky, shining a candle on them.
"Dépêchez-vous!"
the Frenchman shouted. "Hurry up!"
As he spoke, the foul air rising from the hold extinguished his flame. In comparison, the air outside was a cool drink of river water. Gasping, Poro and Jacoby crowded with the other slaves around the main mast. He didn't even mind the acrid stench of vinegar rising from the barrel now being lowered into the hold. As he watched, the mustachioed sailor used tongs to lift a red-hot cannonball from a fire pot before squatting over the hole and dropping it. He then shut the hatch to trap the rising steam. Poro scanned the crowd for Semeta, but all the women and children were below decks, isolated, he hoped, from the vinegar fumes. Beyond the gunwales, the ocean heaved at the sky. No land in sight, not that Poro had expected it. He had surmised, but not told the others, that they'd been confined below decks until well out to sea.
"Eat!"
a deep voice yelled in French. Poro looked up to the quarterdeck, which rose on a stage out of the slave's reach. Standing there was the captain, a large, powerful man with an equally imposing snarl. Poro had only glimpsed him at Goree. Despite the sweltering climate, the captain wore his woolen coat, a wig of brown curls draped over his shoulders like a lion's mane. Poro doubted anyone had understood the command except him, but it didn't matter. No one had eaten in nearly 2 days, and his fellows quickly spotted the pots along the gunwales. He and Jacoby joined the squeeze, swarming the food like termites. "Ugh," Jacoby said when he saw the meal, rice boiled in fat. But Poro dug in with both hands, having long ago broadened his palate beyond his native yams. He was being shoved away to make room for the next group when a scream froze him where he stood. Commotion by the hatchway. Poro looked up from his rice to see slaves stuffing the mustachioed sailor into the fire pot. "Stop them!" the captain yelled. Sailors wielding cutlass swords and handspikes grabbed ropes and swung down to the main deck. Several of the slaves had picked free of their shackles and were climbing up to the captain. He kicked away the ladder, sending them back down. Battle cries rising, the crowd rushed the outnumbered Frenchmen. Blood splashed Poro's face as a sailor disemboweled the man in front of him. Getting out of the way, Poro lost his balance and fell to the deck, taking Jacoby down with him. This toppled other shackle pairs and the rice pots as well. The shrieks of death continued for long minutes. When it was over, a line of sailors pointed their cutlasses at the crowd, forcing it back. At their feet, blood spread in a widening pool from the dead, a half dozen slaves and a couple sailors. Someone propped up the ladder, and the captain climbed down. The big man limped, probably from an old injury, as he paced behind the protective phalanx of his crewmen. The captain grimaced at the handful of corpses. Among them lay the mustachioed sailor. "The self-report," he muttered. Then loudly, "I let you up for air, food, and to sweeten your quarters, and this is how you repay me?" Answered with silence, the captain said, "Who here speaks Le Français? I demand to know the reason for this crime." When still no one answered, he said, "All right then. I start chopping off fingers until someone speaks." In the past, Poro might have let some of the men suffer. Fully half were from old enemies, such as the Wolof and Islamized Tokelau tribes. But in the past weeks had changed him. He cleared his throat, knowing he would regret this. "Moi," he said, "I speak some." Jacoby stared at him in horror as the other slaves stepped away from them.
"Good," the captain said. "You are henceforth my official translator. Now ask your countrymen what angles them so."
"You're taking us away, that's what," Poro wanted to say. But he translated the question into Mende and Wolof. A moment passed, then a voice spoke from the crowd's midst. Poro didn't hear it clearly.
"Who said that?" the captain said. "Tell him to come forward."
Poro did so, and out came a boy who belonged in the children's hold.
"The whites are going to eat us," the boy said. "That's why we fight."
After several minutes of back and forth, the whole story came out. A slave from the Casamance region, now a carcass at the captain's feet, had carried on a broken conversation with a crewman named Roman before the ship weighed anchor. The slave had understood just enough French to be the victim of a practical joke.
"Bring me Roman!" the captain roared.
In minutes, a pale-faced crewman was brought forward and tied to the main mast. The captain personally tore off Roman's shirt.
15 lashes, no less," the captain said to an officer on hand, and handed him a cat-o'-nine-tails.
Then to Poro,
"See? Tell them Captain LeBlanc punishes cruel lies. You Afrikaans are destined for servitude, not dinner plates.
Poro translated this to the astonished crowd. They looked past him to the blows now flaying off Roman's skin. Afterwards, as the slaves were herded below, Captain LeBlanc pulled aside Poro and, by necessity, Jacobi.
You go down last and stay by the ladder in case I need you, and dispel any other lies while you're down there.
Oui, Poro said. And what about our shackles?
What about them?
Poro quickly looked down, regretting the question. This was the kind of presumption that had gotten him sold into slavery in the first place.
Ma, you are a bold one, aren't you? LeBlanc said. All right, then. Tell them I'll remove the shackles tomorrow, if they behave.
The chaos of that first day above deck subsided into a more controlled hell. Twice daily, and for more than a month thereafter, LeBlanc brought them up for meals, this time in more manageable gangs of 10. And when he did require everyone up at once, as during cleanings, he kept deck cannons trained on them. At Poro's suggestion, latrine buckets were stationed at the end of each slave deck, confining, he thought, the stench to certain areas. Not that his shipmates were grateful.
Does the White King give you extra food for being his helper? Hey, Poro, another said, your name offends me. That's the name of my tribe, Society for Men.
We're still dying, Frenchmen.
And another, tell your chieftain that I'm thirsty. Although no longer a shacklemate, Jacobi hadn't left his side.
Be quiet, he said. If it weren't for Poro, you'd still be drinking your piss.
Poro appreciated the defense, but understood the other's frustration. Indeed, they weren't getting enough food or water, especially water. Many had wondered aloud if the captain's strict rationing,
no more than one coconut shell of water per person per day,
reflected inadequate provisioning. Is Semeta starving too? He wondered. He hadn't seen his daughter since they left the Gore Island dungeons. Many times he had called to her through the bulkhead. Perhaps they would be able to hear each other when a few more of the water barrels lining it were empty. Jacobi nodded at the hatch opening above them. Time to eat. Out at the rice pots, Poro felt a cutlass dig into his back.
The captain orders you to remind the Afrikaans to use the spoons.
Poro faced the sailor and saw the captain watching them from the quarterdeck. He held up his wooden spoon.
Except for that first day, we've always used them.
Three more women and crewmen died last night at the floats. The captain says it's because you're uncouth.
Poro didn't understand some of the words, but he gathered the meaning. He passed the spoon to Jacobi for his turn.
Tell the captain that if I could visit the other holds, I'll pass the warning. The children...
He tried not to show his hope. They need instruction the most. The sailor's eyes narrowed.
I'll tell him.
Poro trembled as the sailor climbed to the quarterdeck and conferred with Captain LeBlanc.
If he could just see Semeta, only once.
Above them, crewmen adjusting the sails clutched the rigging as the ship crested a huge wave. Still holding the spoon, Jacobi stared at the rice but remained still.
Eat, Poro said. No, you take my share.
I told you yesterday, I don't want your food. Why are you doing this? Jacobi turned away.
Jacobi?
When his friend looked back, tears had filled his eyes.
I'm going home.
It took Poro a moment to get his meaning. He remembered the day his former shacklemate had wanted to drown. Later, Jacobi had said that in his village, the Griot, tribal storyteller, had taught that souls return to their homelands after death.
You're starving yourself? Poro breathed.
Captain LeBlanc's voice boomed over the quarterdeck.
Why is that man not eating?
Please, Jacobi, eat, eat, Poro said, but it was too late.
The captain had already descended the ladder and was limping towards them.
You must eat,
the captain said. Then to Poro,
is he sick? Don't lie.
Poro hesitated.
He intends to die.
Ah, well, I can't allow that,
LeBlanc said. He gripped his hat when it threatened to blow off.
Tell him not to despair. We're climbing to cooler latitudes and are ahead of schedule. Conditions shall improve.
When Poro translated, Jacobi shook his head.
Don't you see that I am a prisoner here as well?
LeBlanc said.
Yet I eat and I bear my cross each day.
The captain says, Poro searched for words that wouldn't offend his friend, that he regrets being unable to provide better comfort than food.
Oh, Poro, you know we're just cargo to him. If I die, he loses cowrie shells, or whatever they use for money.
Jacoby turned his back. Poro opened his mouth to translate, but LeBlanc held up a hand.
No need. I understand his body language perfectly.
LeBlanc motioned to the sailors guarding the deck. They seized Jacoby and forced him to his knees. Another restrained Poro.
What are you doing? Poro said.
Hold him steady, the captain said,
and a sailor poised a knife at Jacoby's throat. Some of the slaves on deck turned away, shutting their eyes. Captain LeBlanc tied a handkerchief around his fist. When the sailor holding Jacoby nodded, he smashed the slave's mouth.
Pick him up, LeBlanc said,
and when Jacoby was up, he punched again. Blood and precious moisture poured from Jacoby's mouth and eyes. The sailor released him, and he doubled over to spit out his teeth.
Up again.
The sailor picked him back up and forced his mouth open. Shaking his head wearily, Captain LeBlanc scooped a spoonful of rice and jammed it in. When Jacoby tried to spit it out, the sailor slapped his mouth shut and beat on his throat to make him swallow. When they were done, LeBlanc ordered that Jacoby and Poro be reshackled.
You're his friend, LeBlanc said to Poro, and you'll stay together until you talk some sense into him.
Despite additional force feedings over the next few days, Jacoby neared death faster than the slave ship approached its destination. In a thin shaft of moonlight shining through the hatch, Poro worriedly appraised his friend's ribs. They pressed against Jacoby's skin like the outlines of a bad spirit's fingers. Jacoby, at least drink some water tomorrow. Slowly, Jacoby turned from where he leaned against the ladder and stared at Poro with sunken eyes. His words barely made it past his swollen tongue.
Even if I would drink, I wouldn't drink that.
Poro nodded, remembering the algae-laden scum of the past week. When he'd reached into the water barrel and stirred it with his hand, a swarm of mosquitoes had launched from the surface and bitten him everywhere. He sighed and listened to someone walk over the hatch, speaking softly. Poro recognized the limp in the voice. Captain LeBlanc. The slaves all looked upwards, listening to him pace. After a minute, someone said,
"What's he saying, Poro?"
Frowning, Poro strained to make out the unfamiliar words.
Mandou, je vous prie de veiller tous les jours sur ma femme.
I think he's praying for his wife.
Poro looked at the long, cramped line of slaves watching him in the dark. Some were in the process of switching off who sat on whose lap. Another with diarrhea dripping down his legs climbed over his neighbors to reach the latrine bucket. Jacoby had lain down, so Poro shook his shoulder.
What do you think, my friend? Does the captain's wife desire to be on this smelly boat?
When he didn't move, Poro shook him again.
Jacoby?
His friend gave a rattling sigh. Poro rolled him over to see his face.
Oh, no.
The swollen tongue hung from his mouth. Eyes stared at eternity. Weeping in the baking air, Poro picked up his friend and held him. He faced Jacoby towards Africa so his soul would know which way to travel. Muscles stiff with death, Jacoby sat up on his own by the next morning. For hours, Poro had longed to be free of him, but the two remained shackled until summoned for mealtime. He screamed up at the hatch, unable to bear it any longer.
All right, I hear you, you filthy Africans,
called the sailor who let them out. He threw down the shackle key rather than descend himself into the pit. As Poro had been stationed by the ladder for most of the voyage, he'd usually been on burial detail. After handling many dead slaves, enough to fill a village, he considered himself fortunate not to have caught their illnesses. But had his luck changed with Jacoby? Poro's muscles ached this morning, and his stomach hurt. The men had difficulty hauling up the body because it had stiffened at the right angle in which Poro had left it sitting. Jacoby's bare buttocks, emerging from his wrapping, were now purple where the blood had pooled. Out in the sunlight, Poro saw that greenish-red splotches had appeared on Jacoby's neck. The neck had relaxed again, and it hung sadly as another slave named Issei helped him dump the body overboard. Poro got one last glimpse at Jacoby's once vibrant eyes, now two milky clouds, before dropping him into the waves. Jacoby didn't stay adrift for long. Already, the fins of the big fish, Rolkan, he heard a sailor call them, were moving in. The daily dumpings of carcasses had attracted a large school of these Rolkan, and they followed the ship continuously. Thank you, Poro said to Issei, and purposely turned his back on the feeding frenzy. You and I haven't gotten along, so I appreciate this gesture. Issei curled his lip. I helped because the Frenchman pointed at me. Don't expect me to be your replacement friend now. Stunned, Poro watched him walk off to the rice pots. He would have normally reinitiated conversation with someone who challenged him so, but not now. He didn't have the strength, and his stomach was painfully empty. Half of his mealmates suddenly dashed for the gunwales. Holiday! Holiday! Shouted the sailors guarding them, but the slaves had already jumped overboard. Captain LeBlanc appeared on the quarterdeck, hatless, wigless, coatless, and with a napkin on his chest. Don't let the fools drown themselves! Two crewmen pushed Poro aside and threw a net into the ocean. It snagged a slave who was awkwardly swimming out to the Rolkan. Another net landed beside the man but missed the others. More sailors clubbed the slaves who were too weak to pull themselves over the side. When a crewman's gaze fixed on Poro, he held up his hands and stepped away from the gunwale. I have some meta to live for, he thought. We are free! Free to die! Shouted the slaves beyond the net's reach. They quickly fell astern as the ship left them behind. Go! Go! Their companions on deck answered. And Le Rokan tore the waves into a red froth. Poro squinted against the sun, reflecting off the water, watching as one head after another disappeared. Soon the sea was without a spot and the air without a sound. Only the sailors' grunts broke the silence as they hauled in the nets containing the slaves who didn't escape. One of the tribesmen who had been knocked to the deck held up his hand to the sky. Then he used his long fingernails to rip out his own throat. This is the end of part one. Please continue to the second MP3 file for the conclusion of this story.